Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Nartrees Podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book, 1929 Inside the Greatest Crash in Wall Street History, and How It Shattered, A Nation is a Narrative History by Andrew Ross Sorkin that examines the stock market crash of 1929 as a defining event in American economic and political life. Rather than treating the crash as a simple market correction, the book presents it as the outcome of years of speculation, leverage, loose confidence, and institutional failure. Sorkin uses a character-driven approach to show how bankers, investors, policymakers, and regulators helped create the conditions for collapse and then struggled to respond once the system broke down. The book also connects the crash to broader themes of psychology, power, and public belief, showing how financial manias can become national crises. It is written for readers who want a historically grounded account of Wall Street, but also for those interested in how past bubbles illuminate present-day markets and recurring patterns of excess. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, how a decade of speculation and leverage set the stage for collapse. Sorkin treats the crash of 1929 not as an isolated disaster, but as the endpoint of a long boom built on optimism, borrowed money, and widening speculation. The book emphasizes that market vulnerability grew gradually as investors and institutions accepted more risk than the system could safely absorb. That framing matters because it shifts attention away from a single dramatic day and toward the structural fragility that made the collapse possible. By tracing the boom conditions first, the book shows how easy credit and rising prices can reinforce each other until confidence becomes detached from reality. This is one of its central lessons: when leverage is normalized and caution is dismissed, losses can spread far beyond a small group of speculators. The historical detail also helps readers understand why crashes often feel sudden even when their causes have been accumulating for years. Secondly, the crash as a human drama shaped by bankers, investors, and politicians. A major strength of the book is its focus on the people inside the crisis rather than only the numbers. Sorkin presents Wall Street and Washington as arenas filled with ambition, rivalry, denial, and conflicting assumptions about responsibility. Figures such as Charles Sunshine, Charlie Mitchell, Jesse Livermore, and Carter Glass help the narrative show how personal judgment and institutional power interacted during the boom and bust. This approach makes the history more than a chronology of price declines. It becomes a study of how individual decisions can amplify systemic instability. The book suggests that personality matters in finance because confidence, arrogance, caution, and self-deception all shape outcomes when markets are under stress. At the same time, the emphasis on character does not replace structural analysis. Instead, it demonstrates how human behavior gives financial systems their direction, especially when leaders fail to recognize danger or act too late. Thirdly, why the policy response was inadequate and politically constrained. The book pays close attention to the response of government and the Federal Reserve after the crash began, and it argues that the remedies were deeply flawed. Rather than stabilizing the system quickly, policymakers often relied on restraint, moral judgment, and outdated assumptions about how markets should correct themselves. Sorkin uses this failure to show that crises are not resolved by diagnosis alone. They depend on whether institutions are willing to act against prevailing ideology. The depiction of Washington reveals a tension between economic theory and emergency management, especially when officials feared that intervention would reward speculation or distort market discipline. That tension is historically important because it helps explain why the Depression deepened after the initial crash. The book also invites comparison with later crises, suggesting that one reason future policymakers avoided repeating 1929 was because they learned how damaging inaction can be. In that sense, the chapter on response is as important as the chapter on collapse. Fourthly, psychology, panic, and the power of the belief that this time is different. Sorkin places unusual emphasis on psychology, showing that financial bubbles are sustained not only by economic conditions, but also by belief. Investors, bankers, and politicians were all influenced by the sense that modern markets had entered a new era in which old warnings no longer applied. The book returns repeatedly to the seductive idea that this time is different, a phrase that captures how optimism can become a form of collective self-deception. Once that belief takes hold, warning signs are easier to ignore because they appear outdated or overly cautious. The book also examines fear, rumor, and reputational collapse after the market turned downward, demonstrating how panic can intensify a material loss into a social and moral crisis. By treating psychology as a central force rather than a side effect, Sorkin explains why rational actors can participate in irrational systems. This is one of the book's most useful contributions for readers trying to understand recurring bubbles in any era. Lastly, why the 1929 crash still matters in an age of modern bubbles. Although the book is firmly rooted in history, it is clearly written with contemporary relevance in mind. Sorkin draws parallels between the crash era and present-day forms of speculation, including technology-driven enthusiasm, debt-fueled risk-taking, and the tendency to believe that new tools have erased old dangers. The book does not claim that history repeats in exactly the same way, but it argues that the underlying dynamics of leverage, hype, and institutional complacency remain familiar. That makes the book valuable not only as a history lesson, but also as a framework for recognizing recurring warning signs in financial markets. Readers come away with a clearer sense of how bubbles form, why they are so hard to question from inside, and why the aftermath often reveals weaknesses that looked invisible during the boom. This contemporary angle helps distinguish the book from a purely archival account. It is intended to explain the past and also to sharpen judgment about the present. In conclusion, 1929, Inside the Greatest Crash in Wall Street History and How It Shattered a Nation, is best suited for readers who want a serious but accessible history of financial crisis. It will appeal to students of economics, business readers, historians, and general audiences interested in how Wall Street, Washington, and public psychology interact during moments of instability. The practical value of the book lies in its ability to clarify recurring patterns of speculative excess, leverage, policy hesitation, and the social damage that follows a market breakdown. Its intellectual value is equally strong because it connects economic history to broader questions about power, institutions, and collective belief. What sets it apart from many books on the Great Crash is its narrative method. Sorkin does not write a detached textbook account, but a richly reported history centered on people, decisions, and consequences. That approach makes the book more vivid than a standard economic overview while still remaining grounded in historical analysis. Readers looking for a clear explanation of why 1929 mattered and why it still matters will find this book especially rewarding. If you would like to support Andrew Ross Sorkin, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.